Good morning and welcome to Wanda's Picks, the Black Arts and Culture program of the African Sisters Media Network. We are listening to Gina Breedlove, and that title of that particular song is Free. Good morning, Gina. How are you?
Good morning, Wanda. I am quite well. Thank you so much. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. It's a great time to be thinking about freedom and African liberation and freedom from sexual exploitation and pain and persecution and all kinds of great things like that. And I want you to tell us about that particular song, and then we'll talk about this wonderful community ritual on Sunday the 24th in Berkeley.
Well, I wrote that song a few years ago, and I am told it has become a soul classic in the UK.
Congratulations. Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty wonderful.
So classic. Nice.
Yeah, how about that? I've written a lot of music since, and my work has actually deepened over the years for me and become very much about the things that you've just shared. Liberation from sexual oppression and from depression that arises as a result of abuse, and protecting women and protecting our girls and healing and evolving from such things. Reclaiming your life, embracing your life.
Right.
And so that's no small thing, but those are the things that I'm singing about and writing about more so these days.
Mm-hmm, right. It's no small thing at all. And perhaps that's why you are closing the wonderful ritual that's happening in Berkeley at the Civic Center Park on Sunday. The ritual starts at 6:30, and the event, I believe, starts around 5 and is 1 billion rising Bay Area. And it's a sort of inspired by Eve Ensler's latest piece that is premiering at the Berkeley Rep, I Am an Emotional Creature, based on the book about lives of girls around the world. Why don't you tell us about the ritual, and I believe you wrote a special song for it.
You know, I did, but to begin with the ritual, it is connected to Eve Ensler's piece, I Am an Emotional Creature, about the emotional lives of girls and young women. And, you know, Eve Ensler is a person, I've never met her, but I've been following her work for some time. She is definitely a woman who walks her talk. And it seems to me that the root of her life's work has been about protecting women and exposing oppression against women, violence against women worldwide. And so she is planning for her 15th V-Day, the celebration of the 15th annual V-Day, which is February 13th, 2013, to celebrate drawing attention.
It was actually February 14th. It's the same
day. It's February 14th. Mm-hmm. Ah, thank you so much. It's a little early for me.
That's okay. I mention V-Day to my classes. Because people don't think about that. You know, they think about, you know, sort of the Hallmark kind of love stuff, but they don't think about, you know, unhealthy love unhealthy expressions of what people call love, I should say, because love is healthy.
Yeah, love is indeed a beautiful thing. Yes, unhealthy expressions. And I remember, I'm so happy that she chose that date. I'm just ordering my thoughts here. Eve Ensler is in town, and some of her colleagues decided that it would be really beautiful to have an event here to connect and tie in with the build-up for the global celebration of V-Day. So Bay Area Rising is coming together on the 24th. Women from all demographics in the city and coming together to do ritual to uplift and empower our girls. And so there will be participants from Dance Brigade, Studio Naga, Sisters of the Drum, I'm going to be performing as well, and we will come together at about 6:30 and begin the ritual, and it will be, we will be honoring the four directions. And for each direction, there will be an expression of peace tying in for what that direction exemplifies. Like for the East, it will be about release and about opening your heart. And for the South, there's a ritual to talk about despair and anger and releasing that energy from your body so that you can be free and embrace your life. And I don't want to give too much away because I want folks to just come out and be present and to witness. We are praying that it is just full of young women that day. They've done a lot of outreach in the city. And we're inviting husbands and sons and brothers and uncles to come out too and support.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And bear witness and hold space.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be dance, and there'll be drumming, and there'll be blessings for the girls, and there'll be altars and chanting. It's going to be quite amazing.
Yeah, I think so. And for people that are interested in finding out more information, and also if people need sign language interpretation or multilingual interpretation, you can visit BayAreaRising.org for all of the details. They can also use help setting up and decorating and helping with the children's craft activities, which start at 5. And then also the breakdown of the wonderful props and things like that after the gathering. And so
yeah.
Really wonderful. And it's a free event, wonderful opportunity for us to get together. And Berkeley, Juneteenth is happening. I believe it's their silver, and I think silver is 25 or 50?
25.
Okay,
right.
So they're having a 25th annual celebration, so people can go to the Berkeley Juneteenth and just mosey right over.
Oh, that's
the,
so wonderful.
The ritual afterwards. So it'll work out really perfectly if people want to hang out in Berkeley. And if people are going to Stern Grove's opening concert, which is the headliner is Anita Baker, they can mosey on over to Berkeley afterwards because that ends at 4.
See, it's all in alignment. It's all in alignment.
It all works very well, yes. So,
yeah.
So Sister Breedlove, you are a singer, songwriter, and sound healer from Brooklyn, New York, who recently moved to Oakland, and we are so happy that you are joining us on the West Coast. And
you've
toured nationally and internationally with your music, which you call folk soul. Got these great, like breed, love, like, wow, that's wonderful. And then folk soul, nice.
Thank you.
Sure. You've held healing circles from North Carolina to Northern California. And you do one-on-one work as well, sharing with folk the healing alchemy of focused, intentional sound. And and actually, that's where I met you. I knew of you because of a fundraiser you did with sisters Naomi and,
Alexa.
And Naima. For Haiti. I think it was last year in Richmond. And so I knew your name, and then I had an opportunity to actually experience the sound healing at a retreat that we had at one of the wonderful hostels here in Northern California. So why don't you talk about what it means to be a sound healer and then to have a beautiful voice like you do.
Oh, thank you. Please, if I can go back just a little bit, I wanted to talk about this that you asked about, that my friends, my musician friends and I will be performing. Sister Coffee Brown is going to be playing bass, and Shelly, she's amazing. And Shelly,
yes,
Doty.
She is. Coffee Brown is like, ooh, I love her.
Yeah, we had a rehearsal last night. She's just ridiculous. And also the amazing Shelly Doty on guitar, and we have Afia Walking Tree is going to be playing the djembe with us as well. And the song is titled Little Girls, and it's a song that I started about 10 years ago when I began therapy. to heal from sexual abuse and the trauma that ensued, and I got most of it out of my body. And when they when I was approached to come and be a part of Bay Area Rising, I the next morning I got the call about 9 o'clock at night, and then I went to bed, and the next morning I woke up and finished the song, and so it felt like it would be indeed the perfect offering. And it is a piece of, it's an anthem, really, about surviving such abuse and living your life. As my sister Jill Scott says, like it's golden, and as it is. And also, you know, just drawing attention to it and pulling the covers off of it, if I may use that term, terminology, and protecting our girls and lifting them up. And so that's what the song is about. And so I did begin this work about 10 years ago, and when I began my healing journey. And the sound is something that I, that I've done, I've been doing all my life on my own body. I just didn't know how to articulate it. I didn't have a name for it. But it was one of the ways that I was able to move through my childhood. I would find a quiet space, and I would just kind of sing and tone into my body. And along with a rocking motion, which someone, I was in a circle with Lisa tonight, and she shared that the rocking comes from when we are rocking in our mother's womb in the waters of the womb. And so that's one of the reasons why we do. So the sound accompanied with that movement and creates some ease in the body. There has been a lot of scientific evidence to support that sound actually penetrates the skin through the flesh, through the cells, through the bone, through the marrow, and shifts energy in the body, moves things. It's not a new thing, though. As I know you know, it's an ancient healing modality. Mm-hmm. And I was doing it on myself for a very long time, and then there was someone happened to be in my home one day, and at a gathering I was having, and it's funny, I didn't invite her, but you know how spirit works. She was where she was supposed to be, and at the end of the gathering, she was in my home just sobbing, having a some kind of a breakdown or a breakthrough, and I was moved to ask her, could I? Hello?
Uh-huh, I'm here.
Oh, you're there? I'm so sorry. The sound. I said, oh, no, I lost her.
No.
Yay. And then I was moved to ask her, could I help her? And then, and I did. And I toned into her body and helped her to move through what was happening. And then she told someone, and they told someone, and thus began a practice. And people just started to reach out to me. It wasn't until I moved to the Bay that I actually started to pursue it and make it available to folk, thinking that this could be a beautiful way to be of service to our community, you know, for me particularly to women of color, because sound healing is such an esoteric notion, really. Finding language for it and then sharing it with my sisters is has been one of the joys of moving here. There's been lots of opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just yesterday at the monthly Sacred Circle here in Oakland. It's held at the East Bay Meditation Center. I believe is it third Thursdays or second Thursdays?
Yeah, I think it's the third Thursday.
Third Thursdays, right. You you were a special guest, and you actually were able to share your healing techniques with the men and women who were present. So, wondering if maybe you could talk a little bit about what happened. I know it was just really magical that weekend that we went up to Pescadero. And then you gave us a gift, you know, with your singing the Om cycle, and that was just really wonderful. I've enjoyed that quite a bit.
Well, Om is a really beautiful introduction to the power of sound. Om, the first sound, it just has a gorgeous resonance, and when people do it together, you can feel the energy spinning in the circle. in the room. I am in the circle that yesterday it's my intention to share with folk how they can do it for themselves, you know, use the sound in their bodies. So first we begin by breathing together, and drawing your attention to your breath is almost an immediate way to create ease in your body. And so we did that, and then I shared some sounds to open up the heart space and sounds that open up the throat chakra. And we did that, which was really wonderful. We did that in a group. And then I had some, and the circle was just women yesterday. And so three women volunteered. And then I had the group assist me in toning into each person's body. And we focused on the heart area. And it was quite, it's always amazing what happens. You know, you give folk an image and you make sure that they hold to it and hold the sister in love or the brother in love, whomever we are laying hands on. And then we use our sound, and generally there is a release, and the release looks like tears, and which is, you know, really important. You know, the whole purpose of it is, for me, is to get inside and move sadness out of the way, because I believe that sadness roots and it becomes stuck, and then it creates disease in the body. Sadness, anger, grief, it's all grief to me. The anger, the root of it is grief about something. And so we did that with each person in the group, and of course everyone participating in the sound is affected, not just the person in the center of the circle. It's shifting. It's shifting energy for everyone present. And so it was quite amazing. And I believe, and there was lots of discussion about what happened afterwards. And then I make myself available for questions. And because a lot of this work, once it begins, happens in the invisible, really. Once you leave, and over time, over days, things just start to fall away. And I believe then it makes it possible for you to seek help, you know, from your community, either from therapy, which I wholeheartedly support and believe in, doing deep trauma work with wonderful somatic therapists. You know, but first just moving the energy in your body so that you can get to the space to even seek such help, to reach out. Mm-hmm. And so we talk a lot about that in the circle.
Right.
And just all, just different pathways to healing. It's all one thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is all one thing.
It was really quite beautiful, really miraculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk about the intersection of your practice as a healer and your practice as an artist. Yeah, talk about the integration of the two, and your path to this particular expression of your gifts.
Well, you know, it's been and it continues to be really a practice, because I resisted it for a long time. You know, resistance is quite futile. If you do not go where you are being led to go, then you will be dragged. And so it's really relatively recent, like I think in the last 8 months, that I've even begun to embrace and claim sound healing.
Wow.
As part of my life's work. You know, when I was doing it in New York, and I've done it in circles, but I didn't call it such.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like a very big thing to hold and to share. And also, frankly, I've encountered so many practitioners that sort of hold things or claim things that did not feel like there was a root to support it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just figured I'd do the work, you know, quietly, and the truth has a resonance to it, and it's that if you build it, they will come, you know, notion. And I thought that whomever was in, you know, need would be led. But since moving here, it's become clear to me that it is important that I do step into it and hold it and hold my position firmly, because it is a big thing and it's a huge responsibility, and it's deeply important. And you can't hold anything halfway. You can't do anything halfway. You'll get halfway results. So how that figures in with my performing artistry, I've begun to integrate it on stage before I begin an offering, is what I like to call it, a performance. I will ask people to breathe with me. You know, I invite folks to close their eyes and come in, and let's just all be in the room together. And then we'll breathe, and we might tone a bit around the heart space. And then we'll begin. And throughout the performance, I will generally incorporate some toning in the song, somewhere in the song. And sometimes we just do sound and music, and so I'll do it then. And with intention, of course. And my intention is always to lift up all of the folk present and to connect. So I've been on it for a while, Wanda. I've been on this journey for a good minute, and the more that I embrace it, the more I understand that it really is all one thing. You know, I was trying to separate the two things, and even really try to be relatively quiet about the sound healing, because I was afraid of what folks would say, or you know, how I might be perceived. But more and more, I understand that the need is so great that those considerations are not important at all, you know. And the more I open up my arms and not worry about it, well, of course, the more the opportunity comes to be of service.
Mm-hmm. Nice, nice, yeah. So talk a little bit about, you know, your childhood and the move to across the country. You know, that's no little feat, you know. There are differences, geographically as well as, I'm sure, with the people.
Well, yes, indeed. I'm a native New Yorker. I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt like a stranger in a strange land. In fact, people were always asking me where I was from because I don't feel apparently like a New Yorker, although I have felt very much like a New Yorker since moving through the Bay. But I have been really graced and quite fortunate to do a lot of traveling with my work. I've been all over the world and actually all over the United States. And so I got to see that the things that about New York that I find really challenging don't exist in other places, how crowded it is. For me, how dirty it can be, and just the high level of move, 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 rush, 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 rush. After a while, I felt like I was suiting up, so to speak, psychically every time I was about to leave my house. Like, I had to put on layers of armor just to move through the world. And then it was clear to me that it was time to change. I've always loved California and the Bay particularly. I think Northern California, the random beauty here, just feeds my spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I do miss my people. I miss my community, and I am creating community here. I have a daughter as well, and so that was I was 13 years old. She just turned 13. So, you know, this is a huge, huge move for her.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to bring her up in a place that had more ease. And so I decided to do that. I was actually looking at New Mexico, but then I met my beloved at a retreat, and I thought, okay, but this is the place. This is the place where we need to be. My childhood, I have a very large family, and we were raised by my father, and it was precarious, to say the least, full of Well, there was just no one protecting us, and so my sisters and I and my brothers, and so as you can well imagine, when there's no one protecting the child, all kinds of things can happen at the hands of others. And so there was a lot of mishandling, a lot of abuse, and I could sing, praise God, and so that and so I would sing to myself and take care of myself in that way, and it was the one thing that I held on to, and it helped me. It was like a beacon. It was like the light that I would just continue to follow, so I could move through it. And keep my eyes on what I wanted for myself. When I had my own daughter 13 years ago, was the beginning of my childhood trauma coming back to haunt me. Although it had always driven my behavior, of course, I was just asleep to it. But having my baby girl, of course, just cracked me open, and it was then that I began the healing work, because it was really important that I give her everything that I did not get, including the protection, including the power to, you know, to say no, and to cover herself in the world, to give her voice, and to plant love in her skin, and self-care and self-love. So, it was after having my baby girl that I that my feet were put on this road, and so. And of course, that affected my relationship, and it affected my music, and it affected, it affected everything. And so I bless it. I bless it all now. I bless my father, and I bless all the people who have trespassed. And because I'm using all of that work to be of service and to aid others, and I can say that I love being, and I love my life, and I love loving, and I love being here, and I love being of service. And for years, I could not say that. It's been quite a trial. So here it is.
Well, thank you so much, Gina, for joining us to talk about your life and your work and this wonderful event this Sunday, this community ritual. It's going to be so fantastic. 1 billion rising Bay Area. I mean, can you imagine 1 billion people in Berkeley? at the Civic Center Park, Martin Luther King Jr. Way, at Alston Way, across from Berkeley High. The ritual starts at 6:30, and other things happen before that, like there's a children's area at 5 o'clock, and it's going to be all the folks hanging out and mingling, and it should be really beautiful. And it goes until
amazing.
About 8:30, I believe, and then people
until,
can mingle at 9.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it goes until about 9 o'clock,
and
again, like you shared before, we do need volunteers. I am actually going to be setting up altars. I'm the person to check in with about that, and we need help with the altars, and that begins at around 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. and just you know, bring your energy, bring your spirits, bring your joy, bring everything, bring your sadness, just bring it and leave it in the circle, share it. Mm-hmm. We'll be happy to have all present.
Right, it's going to be really wonderful. Well, thank you again for joining us, and look forward to hearing that new song.
Thank you, Wanda. Thank you so much.
and getting a hug, and seeing your beautiful face, and it's going to be just great. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you take good care. And, you know, also this weekend, tonight actually is a concert, but this weekend is the kickoff of the Summer of Peace. Did you know about that?
Yes, I did know about that. Yes.
Yeah. So I've got the Oakland organizers in the green room right now waiting to come on to talk about it. So it's gonna
yay. Okay.
All right. Well, you take good care.
I will. Much love to you.
Okay. Peace and blessings. So, good morning.
Good morning.
So I hear Sister Mahasan. Let's see, I was expecting like four of you. Is Kamisha in on the air with us?
Kamisha
Fatima?
Unfortunately, she won't be able to join us. She is on her way to a training retreat this
mm-hmm.
morning, but
okay.
she sends us her blessings and wishes.
Okay,
and,
super.
Yeah.
Do we have Reverend Sonia Jaha with us? No,
Reverend
okay.
Sonia, she's coming aboard. She did say she would join us this
okay.
morning.
So is Queen Reverend Mutima Imani on the air?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Good morning.
Okay. Good morning. Sister Mahasan Abdul Salam, you have the Genesis Transportation Justice Project and other organizations that you could tell us about. And Queen Reverend Mutima Imani, you're a community organizing and peace building consultant, and you're also a reverend at the East Bay Church of Religious Science. And I want to welcome her. Yeah, and I think there's a third person with us, but I don't know who that person is.
That's Janae Wallach. I'm on the phone.
Oh, okay. Oh, super. Oh, Janae, you're joining us. Okay, super. Excellent. Janae, you are a peace educator, and you're the facilitator of the Oakland Peace Ambassadors. So why don't we go around, and why don't you talk to us, tell our audience about the opening concert and conference, Voices for Peace, and this is a benefit for the Oakland Urban Peace Movement. Why don't you tell us about this Summer of Peace? Sort of reminds me of when Martin King had the
March on Washington. Yeah.
No, not the March on Washington. No, when college students and volunteers were going to the South, it was a summer program. What was it called? It's famous, and I drawn a blank. The whole movement of registering, doing the voter
registration.
Yeah, but it was a summer. It was a summer project, and can anyone tell me what the name is? I'm losing. I can't remember what it was called.
I will look it up for you while we talk.
Okay. All right. So who wants to start?
Go ahead, Mahasan.
Yeah. Well,
Mahasan, tell us about tell us about the project and what you all have been up to.
Well, this is really, an idea. Not only whose time has come, but a memoir that Dean Muhammad, one of my mentors and a leader in the community of African American, the Muslim community here, and in a worldwide thought leader in the cause of peace, always had a saying. He said, living evolves what life needs. And what we found as we came together studying the peace ambassadorship, the training, 16-week training that explored in quite a bit of depth what the peace movement worldwide was about, and providing the type of skills, and as Janae often calls it, the toolkit for building peace in our communities, a solid structure of peace as a way of life in our communities provided, we found that all of us had been converging to this point from some perspective in our life's journey. That is, we had a real strong desire either early in our lives and a consciousness of peace and a desire to see more peace built in the world, not only between, say, person to person, individual to individual, but as a society, that we could all benefit from the structure of a more peaceful society. So as we converged, we arrived at the opportunity to participate in this course. And my personal journey that brought me there, I remember in my early childhood really believing in peace, and there were these concepts and values that I learned in my religious upbringing to value peace and understand what an important part it was of being able to live optimally in yourself and optimally in your relationship with others. So it's always been something that I held on to. In high school and college, my interest went towards international affairs. And one of my heroes was Ralph Munch. And the sterling role that he played in the at its inception, and then moving on to make the inroads for peace in strategic hotspots throughout the world. I just thought that if there were ever a kind of a person I would want to emulate, it would be someone little like him. Little did I know that by providence or the will of God, I would have that opportunity, and that it would be in participation with the SHIFT Network, who's presenting the Summer of Peace 2012 Festival. This is far-reaching. Janae, I want her to tell you about what we consider a real coup, not in a violent way, but in a peaceful way, of being able to bring the Voices for Peace to Oakland, California.
Oh, great. That's a wonderful segue. Yeah, Janae, tell us about yourself and tell us about the Oakland Peace Movement and what it means to be a peace ambassador. And I know you actually came to California by way of New Jersey, right?
With a lot of stops in between. But, yeah, New Jersey is where I was born and raised, in Newark in particular. And like Mahasan, I had pivotal childhood upbringing things that just totally set my heart on wondering how would it work for people to all be able to work on projects together or work on whatever it is they were trying to accomplish without there being violence or hatred or anything like that. So I grew up during the Freedom Summer is what the word you were looking for.
Thank you.
And I was, my parents were activists and they were very involved with the civil rights movement. We had people from the South in our living room on a regular basis talking about what was going on in pretty graphic detail, actually. And the dad was raising money for that and also working to have the first African American mayor elected in the city of New Jersey. In the city of Newark. Sorry, it's early for me. But I was about 12 when we had the riots, and that was very impactful, is the only word I can think of, and it just really tore at my heart that adults weren't able to find a way to deal with the pressing needs other than that level of pain and destruction. So to be in my own community and to see it, parts of it burned to the ground were, images that I will never forget. And that stayed with me, even though I took a long route to get to become a peace educator and went through 30 years of public health, which gave me all the training in the tools that I now refer to as the tool belt, where I could just imagine each of us as superheroes. That rather than being able to be invisible or being able to fly, you know, our human superhero qualities are love and compassion and empathy. And the tools that we have in our belt are the things that we were learning in the class. And I'm just going to clear my throat 1 second. So we've been learning about everything from inner peace and all kinds of meditation through the kind of work you would use in community and use in your thinking, from system thinking to the kind of skills that I was learning in my work in public health with multiple groups using the same grant money or something like that, mediation and negotiations, and et cetera. So in the vision that I've been sharing with all of those who came together to take the class we were able to get through the SHIFT Network called the Peace Ambassador Training, which is a global training, and the SHIFT Network was very generous with us and helped with scholarships. There are now 27 of us in Oakland who went through that course and became certified in it, and it covered inner peace through international peace in 16 weeks. And that was a small vision of what it would look like in my mind if our whole city was taking in depth each of those skills. So based on having such a solid cadre of people here, we spoke with the Shift Network on multiple occasions and asked them to please consider Oakland as the city where they launch their global Summer of Peace effort versus any other city that they could choose from, because we are here and we wanted to help and we wanted to give back, and we wanted it to be part of our own rollout to have Seasons of Peace in Oakland. So we are this for us, the concert tonight, which is going to be amazing, and people can go onto the website to both look at the lineup and to get just to register, but the concert is free. Voicesforpeace. I'll give you the website in a second as soon as I look it up.
Keep it right.
In order to get the entire lineup, the website to go to is summerofpeace.net/Oakland-event. And as soon as you look up summerofpeace.net, you'll see the Oakland event. And it starts from the top with who's singing and performing tonight. Some of them are local Oakland groups. And then goes on to show you who's in the conference tomorrow. And you can click anywhere from there to get tickets. But the beautiful thing is that the concert is free. And it is a benefit for a group called the Urban Peace Movement, led by Nicole Lee. She has been working for years in Oakland, and particularly working in East Oakland, with young people, helping them learn skills to go from a culture of violence to a culture of peace. And so that's the group that will be benefited tonight. Tomorrow has our own teacher who led us through the 16 weeks, James O'Day, and he has an incredible background, including having been the Washington director for Amnesty International, running the Sabre Foundation, leading the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and now running this kind of a course that he, using this kind of technology, he's able to teach people all over the world at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can I give some of the artists that are going to be featured at the concert this evening? The concert, Voices for Peace, begins at 7:30 and it goes until about 10:30, and it's at the Scottish Rite Center in Oakland, which is at 1547 Lakeside Drive, which is right across the street from Lake Merritt. And the concert is going to feature Maria Muldaur, and she's been a guest on the show, Maria Muldaur and Friends. She was recently performed at the Berklee World Music Festival. Lukan Mwetu Choir, they've also been on the show before, and I used to sing with them. Emmett Powell and the Gospel Elites, Earth Amplified, with additional performers in. So it's going to be a wonderful, fun time. And then at the all-day conference, which starts at 9 o'clock in the morning and goes to about 6:30 in the evening, besides James O'Day that Janae mentioned, Marianne Williamson is going to be speaking, Belvy Rooks, Barbara Marks Hubbard, the list goes on and on and on. Reverend Eloise, Janae's going to be speaking. Yeah, it's going to be really, really great. How did you get such a lineup?
Well, that's the gift, Wanda. The gift is that they agreed to come to Oakland, and part of it was, would you showcase Oakland for the amazing peace work that's actually happening here, but that's not the kind of publicity Oakland gets, except for people like you helping to highlight locally what we're doing, and that goes internationally. But we were looking for a way to build upon the work that Mayor Kwan is doing with the 100 Block Initiative and bring to light how many groups are here, and that was part of the whole reason to create the Oakland Peace Ambassadors, to find each other and begin to work together. So the Shift Network gets the credit for their relationships with the world leaders, and we were also discussing with them people who are local that should be highlighted. But then, you know, they're well acquainted with many peace builders.
Yeah.
Wanda, if I can jump in just for a minute before we go to Mutima, because she brings a wealth of connection.
I know. I just mentioned her pastor. Yes, go ahead.
Yes. but we were able to maximize our previous connections in the work. As you mentioned, my work with Genesis and Transportation Justice, we were approved last month for the 25-year transportation plan, strategically adopted by the Regional Transportation Commission that disseminates over $227 billion of funding just for transportation in our 9-county region. So we have a free bus pass that's been approved to start the year 2013 and on for as long as we fund it for our middle and high school youth so that they do not have to sacrifice any of their school success by not being able to get there. So people like Reverend Daniel Buford, who is the prophetic justice ministry at our renowned Allen Temple Church, will be an opening speaker tomorrow morning, Saturday, in their prophetic justice work that's being done throughout the community, a 90-year history of involvement and organizing in our community locally as well as nationally with the Beyond the Bricks program. So Matima will share some of what her connections and the profound impact that she and her community bring also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Queen Reverend Matima Imani, why don't you talk about peace? So far, I think perhaps we think others know what we mean by peace. I was wondering maybe we could you could start with defining what, you know, what is peace?
Well, we are looking at it from two standpoints, or many ways we're looking at what is peace. And the first place is peace is a place of harmony inside oneself where one is content, one is in self-love, one is in self-appreciation. And when one is in that place and living from the heart, compassion is activated, and then there is the possibility and the reality to have peace within relationships. And so we're looking at, well, the way that I look at it is like there's like four tiers. The first one is the intrapersonal, where a person is making peace with their own self, grounding themselves in the place that they are in the universe and appreciating the gifts and talents. And then there's that was intra, and then there's interpersonal peace, where you're having peaceful relationships. And once a person is able to have peaceful relationships, we move to the organization or community tier. When a person has inner peace and peace in their relationships, they take that into their community, they take that into their organizations. So the vision is to be, to help people to be at peace and to clear whatever ways that is difficult to be with peace with self, so it's easier to be with peace with other people. And then that just rolls out. And in Oakland, we've been working on peace for quite some time. This morning when I was getting dressed, I reached for a necklace and I saw my Oaklanders for Peace and Healing, which came out of a group of people who were really standing up for justice before the Oscar Grant and Measure Lee trial went on, the death of Oscar Grant. And that group of people, which was about 25 organizations, came together when Measure Lee was on trial for the death of Oscar Grant, and we reenacted the Oaklanders for Peace and Justice. And now, being invited into the Peace Ambassadors, it's a new circle that's growing, but there are already circles in community. There has been lots of community gatherings in the last 5 years that I'm aware of, where people in Oakland are coming together to look for peaceful solutions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I wanted just to say that I'm the social justice minister for the East Bay Church's nonprofit organization called Faces of the East Bay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, talk about that a little bit.
Well, Faces is the East Bay Church of Religious Science nonprofit organization. It's been around for since like 80. I'm sorry, 98. And we have been given money by several foundations to do town hall meetings to heal racial wounds. We did restorative justice circles, and we were charged by the people who came to our town hall meetings to meet with the police chief to make better relationships with the police. So I've been working on that for about 5 years, and it's been really exciting and slow, but exciting to see the progress that we've made. And I feel like this Summer of Peace conference and concert that's happening this weekend is it's like an opportunity for us to celebrate all the things that's already been happening and to use that as a springboard for rolling out kind of a citywide campaign for better community relationships for peace.
Mm-hmm. Where is the conference happening? What's the location for the conference?
The conference is in the same spot at the Scottish Rite, the beautiful looking out to the lake.
Yes.
So we have that building for Friday night and Saturday.
Okay, excellent, excellent. And then I know on Monday they're going to be these telephone conferences that are available to people, and then if you miss the call in time, you have a few days or so, maybe even longer than that, to listen to what transpired in the trainings. Could anyone talk about that as well?
I don't have that in detail, but it if you go to the Shift Network Summer of Peace website, each week has a different theme, and they'll be interviewing people who are peace building leaders in that theme, whether it be forgiveness or healing or something. And then those sessions are recorded. So I will look that up too so we can announce that. But that's the kind of thing that anybody from anywhere in the world can listen in on.
Yeah. Janae, in fact, I'm sitting here looking at the beautiful invitation that has been sent out and will continue to be circulated. If someone were to Google Voices for Peace Festival, they will get a comprehensive scheduling of the activities, not only today, which begins with a live broadcast and kickoff of the three-month event, online TV broadcast for the Voices for Peace Festival. And just Google that, and you'll be able to tune in. And we know that this festival includes the opening concert tonight and the Peace Conference on Saturday with Marian Williamson, Bellevue Rooks, Barbara Martz Hubbard, James O'Day, and other amazing peace builders from Oakland, along with messages from peace builders at the Rio Plus 20 conference, the United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development, and events that include people like the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, Arun Gandhi, Alice Walker, Ambassador Chaudhry, and many more peace leaders and pioneers. Phil Donahue is one. Jack Kornfield, that name may sound familiar, Bernard Lafayette, Azim Khamisa, a civil rights activist and peace activist, and spiritual leader Matthew Fox. So there is something for everyone for this free three-month series of live and online events that will empower you and thousands of others in this growing global movement to create peace. As Mutima said, from the inside out.
Mm-hmm. So this training that you all participated in, I believe, how many weeks was it? 16 mm-hmm. weeks. When is this going to be offered again? And how do people become peace ambassadors? What's the job description?
The training has happened three times, and I hope to meet with James O'Day this weekend and talk to him about what's next. It's not being offered as of this moment, but that's on my agenda to talk with him and see what's possible. And to join us, I'm happy to give my email address out and ask people to please, if they're interested and they're from around here, to please contact me. And I think we need to grow the circle. And so that.
But the question is, what does it entail, being a peace ambassador? What does that mean?
I believe that we are going to be inventing it. Right now it means that we've gone through the course. It's going to mean is that we are going to be bringing together all the peace-building groups that already exist in Oakland,
mm-hmm.
and begin to solidify our relationships. And as Matima talked about, we're looking to work with the city, work with the school district, work with the groups that have access to all the people who live in Oakland, and literally begin to have some of these kind of trainings that we have right here, from restorative justice to meditation to mediation, be available for a much larger sense of the community than there is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
Donna, if I may add to that, you know, this is a big deal. It's a launch of a 3-month summer of peace, or season of peace, which there are 4 seasons to the year. So this will be rolling out in terms of classes, trainings, opportunities available to any who are interested in becoming peace leaders. We have a free peace education telesummit in this season, and it's going to be featuring peace leaders in the fields of forgiveness, nonviolence, communication, education, science, sports and Olympics, arts and culture, business, military, and politics. So for whatever walk of life or walk of endeavor that a person participates in already, there is an application for peace. And doing that in the strain of peace that will transform literally the communities in which we live. You know, do you want to experience more ease and a deeper sense of joy and well-being in everyday life? Do you wish you could sustain a deep sense of oneness with all of life? Would you like to forgive the people who've harmed you, but struggle with releasing old beliefs and beliefs? Do you long for more harmonious relationships with loved ones, coworkers, and community members? And do you want your part to heal painful wounds within your family, community, nation, and in your own life? Well, during the Summer of Peace, you will receive these tools and insights and access leading to doing peacemaker work and making communities peacemaking communities, helping us to generate more peace in our heart, home, workplace, community, and the world. We had to experience the Interrupters video. I know that has been being shown a lot, and we're just in admiration of the courageous and mighty work that they are doing as they act as peace interrupters, violence interrupters,
right,
through a peaceful force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, thank you all so much. We're out of time right now for joining us. That was Mahasin Abdul Salam, Genesis, Transportation Justice, and thank you so much, Queen Reverend Matima Imani and Janae. How do you pronounce your last name, Janae?
Janae Wallach.
Wallach, mm-hmm. Peace educator and facilitator of the Oakland Peace Ambassadors. So looking forward to our checking in over the summer, just in case you know, people have not sort of plugged in, and talking about how this movement is accelerating and moving forward into the next season. And also information about how people can get the training and can become peace ambassadors, you know, within their own homes, within their own communities. So thank you all so much for joining us today.
And thank you for
having us. Thank you for
Thank you for having us, Wanda.
And look forward to seeing you at the kickoff concert tonight. It's going to be really lovely.
Right.
Yeah. And also at, you know, some of the conferences. There's so much happening tomorrow.
So make sure you come into the piece open room so you see some of the other things that are going on, the vendors and some of the other healing activities we're going to have.
Peace Oakland Room. Wow, that sounds so lovely. Okay, definitely.
And remember, the whole event is free to youth 21 and under.
Oh, that's
awesome. Both the concert and the conference.
Right, and I noticed that there was a Oakland resident deal, which was kind of cool for the conference,
It's not Oakland resident. City employees, school district employees, and their guests can access the conference at a much lower rate using the code City of Oakland when they register.
Right, okay, super. All righty, well, looking forward to seeing you this evening, and thank you so much for all of your great work.
Thank you, Wanda.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wanda.
You're welcome. Peace and blessings. Good morning, and welcome to Wanda's Picks. Hi, is this the director?
Yes, hi, Marissa Wolf. Wanda? Hello, Wanda? Hello?
partnerships dissolve, alliances shift, and romances ignite as a tragic accident unleashes the town's mysterious history. Blurring the line between body and spirit, good is an otherworldly love story of the dis in parentheticals, possessed.
That's right.
Yeah. And so I was wondering, when I was thinking about the play, it was just, you know, so, you know, multi-sensory. We've got the stage for people who haven't been to Crowded Fire, it's a really wonderful theater in that, you know, there is no fourth wall. I mean, the audience is right there almost on the set. And it opens up, you know, we're in this general store, and then on the side is the living quarters and other places like outside the door. And the factories are in our imagination right behind the general store. And
right.
So we have this real nice small town feel, and we've got the, you know, the prodigal son coming back after, you know, a really successful career as a musician and comedian. He has an act with a woman, Patricia,
right.
and they're quite good. And she doesn't know why he doesn't want to keep on going, you know, but something else is calling him besides his father's recent demise, you know, love calls, right?
Right.
And then you've got, you know, sort of resonances of the Black church sort of in the cadences, like the rhythms of the piece, particularly when we get to the part where the spirit worker is called in to try to
right.
to sort of help this woman who is also wandering. What is the actress's name who plays the woman that Patricia meets on the train?
The character's name is Sunny. And that's Lauren Spencer.
Yeah, Lauren Spencer's Sunny. She is just amazing,
this
girl who is running away because she wants to be herself and not be what her family and community wants her to be, marrying her off to this old
right.
man. Like, no, heck no.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so then the actor, is it, Wayman as, you know,
mm-hmm.
Hunter Priest, is, I'm like, whoa, he is like, I love that part.
Yeah,
I love that part, and I love it when Sunny is possessed. I mean, you talk about haints, you know, in the African tradition, and I'm from New Orleans, so, you know, I know all about that stuff. And you talk about restless spirits, and there's a lot of restlessness happening in the energy of the different cast, you know, members.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I was wondering if you could talk about sort of this, the inheritance as a theme, and honoring one's
mm-hmm.
relationships as another, and not being afraid of public opinion, and
right.
and there are really no secrets because everybody knows everything. And then you think about the
right.
blood relationships, like literal blood relationships,
right.
and how things are carried through the blood.
Right. Yes. Yeah. All of that is in there. It's really, really rich, and I think. You know, one of the ways that Christina kind of investigates all of those themes you're talking about is through the idea or questioning of possession. You know, both the spiritual possession, that there are two characters who become possessed with other spirits that are, one is invited down, one is drawn down as a welcome spirit, and one is a sort of hostile spirit. So there's that form of possession, and there's a lot about just possession through relationships and through, you know, sort of love and desire being a form of kind of sometimes wanting to own or to, you know, kind of the ways in which possession plays into a loving relationship. And then there's also just being possessed by a store or possessing a store. Like, do you have ownership over this store? It's very contentious. You know, who does the store belong to? Does it belong to the young man whose father left it and, you know, now it passes down to him? Or does it belong to the young man who's actually been working at it for 20 years?
Right, true.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, and I think that Christina carves out each of those things really subtly and smartly so that we're kind of left piecing it together.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's so well done. I just think about, you know, David E. Moore's character,
mm-hmm.
Truth. You know, he thought that he was going to inherit the store. I mean, until...
Stacy?
Yeah, until Stacy comes back, who's played by Yahya Abdul-Mateen
mm-hmm.
the second. He's the son because he didn't have a father
right.
that he knew, and he loved Stacy's father, and Stacy's father made promises to him that he finds out are kept, and so he's like displaced.
Right.
He's like, well, what
right.
am I going to do with myself? This is my whole life. This is what
right.
I was going to do,
yeah.
you know, run this store and, for the community, I am good goods. And now that you're back and you don't know how to run the store, you don't want to run the store. He's just so
right.
funny.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
The store itself is a site of, a kind of a heavy past,
mm-hmm.
and that the store has survived an invasion, and we're not told what kind of invasion, but some kind of invasion has happened in the town. The store is still standing. And so, yeah, this sense of who belongs to the store and who does the store belong to. And it is also the site in which all of these characters come back together, and so there's so much, there's a lot of reconnection inside the store as well.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And you think about a store, called, in the last name, the surname is Good. Or
right.
Good. So it's like, and Good Goods, and that's like, That's a real positive affirmation, yet there's a negative or sinister kind of overtone
right.
because you think about the factory and how people, like, there aren't that many options, and
right.
you think about options now for employment or entrepreneurship. So either you work in the store or you work in the factory, and if you work in the factory, it sounds like, people get worked to death. And then you've
right.
got these characters that, live on the other side, and their ancestor died in a really mysterious, tragic way, and they all carry a piece of her on them as a good luck
right.
charm. And so that's kind of interesting and sinister. And then we've got the other story of Wire, who's performed
mm-hmm.
by Armando McLean, who's a twin of Patricia, who is performed, as we mentioned, by Melina Williams. So we got Wire, we've got Truth, we've got Sunny, we've got a priestess, we've got so
mm-hmm.
many names, which are not just names, they're like almost like archetypes.
right, I think that's true. Yeah, that's someone in the cast, Anthony, who plays Wayman's Hunter Priestess, he was talking about, the ways in which, folks in his community, like that he grew up, in San Francisco, actually, but this whole sort of thing about, like, you're called, you have a given name, like you have a birth name, but then you have a name that you're called by everybody. And I think that's part of what Christina is playing with, too, is like, if you have a name that you kind of inherit, then all your friends call you that name, there's something very positive about that because it'll be some, characteristic about you potentially, but also is there a way in which you're avoiding something else by not using your real name? I mean, it's a really interesting question.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And also the sort of having this moment where a real significant moment is Wire's birthday, and
right.
he's never had a party when Stacy comes home. And so Stacy said, well, let's throw you a party.
right.
And then Patricia has never gotten her brother a present.
right.
So
right.
It's just so interesting. And then Sunny comes in and she's really a Sunny presence, and they really get a kick
mm-hmm.
out of her energy.
Right.
And she's never been anywhere, and so she's really happy to be in this new town, which is very different from her other town where she was.
Yeah. That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah, and you get the sense about this town that it is isolated somehow. Christina doesn't tell us where it's set, just somewhere. She calls it the side pocket of America. And it's Southern because of how she writes. She kind of writes the accent in. So there's a sense of isolation here, or that the town, it's really, it's such a sharp focus just on this one town and not on the outside communities surrounding it, So she actually creates a landscape that is a kind of magical in that way, that it's, very unique. And also she doesn't tie herself to one time or place, in Southern Black history, so that it remains really open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk about, as a director, I mean, there's singing. I mean, there's the the stump, you know, like, I mean, it's like really, I mean, it's just really beautiful, you know, when the new friends are and relatives are trying to get that spirit that possessed Sunny, get it out of her. And then the priestess, Hunter Priest, is telling them, you know, giving them sort of the rules, like it's going to do this and it's going to do that. But can you imagine?
Right.
I mean, you know, we think about possession in you know, in the Black church, you know, when the people get the Holy Ghost, and that's a good possession. And then you think about an evil possession where this thing gets into this woman, and then at points she could, like, she tries to resist its presence within herself, and sometimes she can, you know, come out of it a little bit to be able to keep it from doing what he wants to do, but other times she can't, and so they have her tied up.
Right, exactly.
So she doesn't, as you know, she as, you know, not as herself, but as being possessed. So talk about, you know, how you manage all of this as a director. You know, and also you have video. You know, so there's imagery, and the lighting is fabulous.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And the sound score. And then, you know, you've got these wonderful actors who are singing, and they're dancing, and they're, ooh, it's just gorgeous.
Right. That's good. Good. Well, you know, yeah, it is a lot of layers, as you say. And I think, you know, a lot of that, my job is to work with designers and actors who I just think are tremendous, you know, and that, so that then we're creating the landscape together, you know. What's interesting, and we also worked with an amazing movement choreographer, Rami Margron, who is in Drip, and she's a Crowded Fire resident artist, and so she is the one who helped shape the possession scene, and she created both the sort of dancing and singing around the exorcism, and she also created all of the kind of movements inside the possession. So, or she in tandem with the actors, I should say. So, you know, it's just a really strong team working together to kind of think about, like, what kind of world do we want to create based on what Christine has given us in the script. And I think we were looking to create a very layered landscape, and a landscape that feels haunted and eerie, you know, in which past and present are kind of like all one. And that's where we had the idea to add video to give you the sense of the kind of presence of this factory that's looming in the distance, and the kind of smoke, the sky is always smoky, and we're in a very small performance space at the Boxcar Playhouse in Soma, and so, you know, and it's a black box theater, and so your task, I think, is, as a director, is to kind of use the entire space, because it's small, and so we actually have video projected on all four walls during the play, so there's really a sense that you're kind of in the store with the characters, because it's very intimate.
Right. Yeah, it's just really fantastic, and I think you did a marvelous job in sort of you know, making this work live off the page. Because it's just like, oh my goodness, it's just fantastic. a lot of us didn't know what to expect. We like Christina Anderson's work, so it's like, okay, it's gonna be good.
Yeah,
we don't know
what
it means.
Great. That's great. Well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think you all do some marvelous work. And I just love it the way you're right there in the hood, so to speak.
Right. That's true.
You're
right off Sixth Street.
Yeah, you are definitely. I mean, I think the facility that you share a theater with, it's it looks like it has, like, does different kinds of services in the community.
Huh? Up above us, above the theater, is affordable housing.
Okay.
So
okay.
We are, and we share a wall with the community room in that building.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Do the residents, do they come to the theater and see the shows?
You know, that's a great question. I wish there was more cross-pollination. You know, we do. I would actually say that the folks we have, at Crowded Fire have most contact with are some of the kids in the building who are always interested in what's going on. And so we'll, you know, when they stop by, when we're just rehearsing, we'll show them the set and the props and backstage and kind of talk to them about the show. And they are, any of the residents, including the kids, can get free tickets to any of the shows.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to let our audience know that the Crowd of Fire Theater's West Coast premiere of Good Goods continues again through tomorrow, unless you're extending it. Are you extending it?
No, unfortunately, just through tomorrow.
Oh, darn. So there is a performance tonight, Friday night, the 22nd, and tomorrow, and both performances are at 8 o'clock. And Crowd of Fire Theater is located in the Boxcar Playhouse, 505 Natoma Street. And what street is that off of? Is it off of 6 or 8?
It's off of 6.
Off of
6. Yeah,
6. Okay. Mm-hmm. And is that the Civic Center BART station? Do you walk down?
Yeah, you could absolutely do either Civic Center BART or Powell.
Okay.
Either way.
All right.
Yeah.
Super, super great. And the phone number for Crowd of Fire is 415-255-7846. And if you want to find out about their season and anything else happening there, you can visit crowdedfire.org, crowdedfire.org. So anything else coming up you want to tell us about?
You know, we have two other fantastic shows this season. The one is called Invasion by Jonas Hassan-Kamiri. It's this wonderful, hilarious, fragmented look at Arab identity in this country and the kind of fears around that. So that's going to be an exciting one. And then in the fall, we have one called The 100 Flowers Project by Christopher Chen. It's an amazing local playwright, and it's about a troupe of actors who are doing a play about Mao and the reign of Mao in China, but then the play ends up kind of taking over the actors, mirroring Mao's rise to power. So we've got a lot of, you know, really kind of juicy, political, meaningful, exciting work going on.
Nice, nice. Well, super. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and maybe next time we can get Christina when she has another play that you're producing.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Wanda. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. I just really enjoyed it, and I sure wished I had time to come back and see it again before the curtain closes on it.
That's right. Thank you.
All right, you take good care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. That was the wonderful director of the current production of Good Goods at Crowded Fire Theater, Artistic Director Marissa Wolf. And while we wait for our next guest to join us to talk about summer sounds at the Lorraine Hansberry Theater, the kickoff of the wonderful music series, I think I'm going to play a song by Mr. Saunders. And let's see, which one do we want to play? We will play his Tender Loving. All righty, here we go, and he'll be joining us shortly.
That I been flying in a 747 plane. Might sound a little strange, I'm just trying to reach her. I can be your student and I'll let you be my teacher. Pretend we at the movies cause tonight's a double feature. They're doing the wave like we're sitting in the bleachers. I never thought love could ever feel like this. Every time I see your face I wanna give you a kiss. The homies might laugh, they clown and diss, but when I'm on the road, girl, it's only you that I miss. For always.
Saunders, who is kicking off Lorraine Hansberry's Summer Sounds, and Tony credits his current success to the fact that he was taught by so many music legends, and he comes from a musical family. His world-famous father, keyboardist Merle Saunders, always had a musical career in mind for his son, and started with his godfather, pianist Wynton Kelly, and continued with Stanley Turrentine, Sonny Rollins, John Handy, organ great Jimmy Smith, and bassist Paul Chambers, all of whom were around Tony at an early age. And I believe that might be him. Let's see. Good morning. How are you? Uh-oh. Good morning. How are you? Oh, is this not Tony Saunders? Uh-oh. Maybe not. So, anyway, I am going to play another Tony Saunders song and see where he is. This one's called Tender Loving. About an event that's happening tomorrow. There are so many wonderful choices of things that you can do this weekend, Juneteenth in Berkeley. The Summer of Peace kick off tonight and the workshops tomorrow, all at the Scottish Rite Center in Oakland. You can, you know, in the evening, you can go see Good Goods at Crowded Fire Theater. And I'm looking for, there's this event that I was noticing, and it has to do with infant child mortality in the Black community, and I wanted to share those details with you as soon as I locate them. Oh, here it is. It's called Saving Our Future, Saving Our Future Community Dialogue East Bay, and that's taking place on Saturday the 23rd from 10 to 2 at the East Bay Community Foundation in the Domenico building at 200 Frank Ogawa Plaza in Oakland. And to RSVP for the conversation and workshop, you visit tinyurl.com/6n969OD. And this is a Priority African Network sponsored event, along with KQED and Women and Girls Lead. So you can just go to Priority African Network for the other information about how to pre-register, or RSVP, I should say. And then there's going to be another conversation, Saving Our Future Community Dialogue Silicon Valley, Saturday, July 14th from 10 to 2 at the Martin Luther King Library at 150 East San Fernando Street in San Jose. And, again, you can RSVP by calling 408-634-4837 to register. And all events are free of charge. So I am going to play another song and then see if we can get Tony in the studio to talk about Romancing the Bass, which is a really wonderful concept, and he is a great artist. Let's see, what am I going to play now? Find us a song for the summer, and then we will see if we can get him on the air. I really like Liz Wright, and don't have much of her work, but I'm gonna play Fire from her CD Salt. Saunders to talk about His first concert, the first concert in the series at Lorraine Hansberry Theater tonight, Romancing the Bass. I read a little bit of your bio while we were waiting for you to join us. Apologize for the confusion around who calls whom.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah,
I'm just
glad
to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. So talk about, you know, your attraction to music. You play a variety of instruments. However, you're really well known for your work on the bass that you started playing at 14.
Yes, correct. I love playing the bass. You know, I grew up in a household where my dad was a famous musician, Merle Saunders, and he had me around great musicians from when I was really young. Like, I had piano lessons from Herbie Hancock, piano lessons. I hung around Sly Stone when I was young, when he had a radio show in San Francisco. Sylvester Stewart, I was on his radio show, and he gave me an organ when I was 10 years old. So I grew up playing the piano. I graduated from the Conservatory of Music in San Francisco, but I heard these bass players play one day. Actually, my dad was producing the Hawkins family, and I heard the Hawkins family, it was Walter Hawkins and Salah. And I heard this bassist play named Anthony Davis, and I wanted to play bass. That's all I wanted to do. Then I heard the second guy that I heard play, his name was Lee Miles, who was playing with Miles Davis. I heard him play, and I've been playing ever since.
Right, right. So what do you have planned this evening at the concert?
Tonight we're really excited about doing music at the Lorraine Hansberry Theater, which is a great theater to hear music at. It's, really reminds me of an East Coast place. It reminds me of the Sanger Theater in New York, actually. But it's a great place to hear music. It's usually used for plays, but they wanted to do a series of music events there, so we're doing that. And, tonight my record, Romance in the Bass, has been on the charts for 7 months, and which is great for me. And it's great for the people involved with the record. And we're going to be playing songs from that record tonight. And, it's a great show. The band features Tiani Pointer, who is one of the Pointer sisters' nephews. And it features the great vocalist Misa Malone, who stars in Beach Blanket Babylon. I got it right now. And it also has Royale. We're actually reuniting with Royale. I worked with him. This guy used to sit on the stage when I was 17 playing with my dad's band. He used to sit on the stage and just tell me he's going to play music with one day. This guy sings like Michael Jackson, and I'm not kidding. He has that type of voice and really voice. So we're really excited that he's going to be featured with us tonight, as well as with my regular band, which features Angelo Luster on sax, Phil Hampton on guitar, Alan Leong on keyboards, and Richie Iguan on drums.
Mm-hmm. Right. Wow. Yeah, before you came on the air, we played one of your pieces that you sent me, Tender Loving, so tell us about Tender Loving and
Tender Loving is a true song. I was dating Lady Luisa Rodriguez from Puerto Rico about 3 years ago, and her son submitted that song to me and said, "Tony, I've got a great song for you for my album." And believe it or not, that song, except for the arrangement by me, is pretty much like he gave it to me. It talks about true love and tender loving, and, you know, it's a great song. It has great feelings. And when I got to spend time with him, because he was out here when we recorded it in San Francisco, we both talked about stories about being in love. And the song just has such a feel for my whole empathy for romance in life. My Romance in the Bass is not only what I do with the bass, but it's what I do with life. So Tender Loving, you know, it just came out really beautiful. It has that rapping on it by Tiani Pointer, and it was sung by Tony Lindsay, who was the lead singer in Santana. And it was a great story getting him to sing, because he always bugged me, said, "Tony, why don't I ever sing on any of your projects?" And, you know, he sang that song finally on my project. And, you know, the song is just a great song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk about your creative process. Do you, for instance, your latest CD, Romancing the Bass, are a lot of them, are some of them, how much of the project are original pieces that you wrote, and how do so what do you look for in a song, and how does it come to you? Do you do the music, or do you have the lyrical content first?
Yeah, you know, both. I talk about that part is I usually, it depends where the song comes from. Like the song one of the songs on the album, Heart Song, my friend had begged me to come see the singer, Mies Malone. And I actually had the music in my head after watching her sing that first day. So sometimes I just get the music down and then I add the lyrics to it. There's a lot of them. Every original on there that I wrote, it's just the mood I'm in. That was written about the girl in Puerto Rico. Heart Song was written about Mies Malone. Both of those songs, I wrote the music first and then wrote the words. And Mies Malone wrote the words. No One Could Love Me Like You Do. I wrote the music, and Larry Batiste, one of my partners, who's also just finished doing Charlie Wilson's record, he wrote the words. So it varies, but usually I write the music, then I do the production. I'm a producer also, so I'll lay down a basic part, and I pretty much know what everybody's going to play, because God gave me that gift to know how the end of a song is before it begins. So I can say all of the originals on there are true stories. No One Could Love Me Like You Do. It's kind of a song, half pop, half gospel, because no one could love us like the man upstairs, and that's what that song talked about. And then the two songs that aren't on there that I wrote. There's three songs actually. California Love is on there because I love that song by Tupac and Dr. Dre. And I just loved it. And I actually happened to, in the 80s, I coached varsity football and taught a music class at Tam High School. And Tupac was going to the school at the time. And, you know, he would always come up to me, Mr. Thomas, how you doing? He's always really a polite kid. You know, I watched him go to drama. I watched him act in plays. And, you know, I saw him again when he was famous, and he's still that same kid to me. And so my love for that song is just like, I like Tupac and I love the beat of that song. The other song, Is It You, that's not mine. Is It You, I know the writers of that song, Lee Ritenour, Bill Chaplin, who sang with Chicago, and I also grew up liking him, and Eric Tag, and I just love the song ever since that it first came out in the 80s. Once I get an affinity for a song, it's eternalized. But most of my songs are very personal to me. They mean what the words say, and they have a lot of depth to them. And, you know, I'm involved with the production from beginning to end, you know, because I also engineer. The only thing I don't do is master.
Wow, that's great. I bet that's really helpful in this industry. I noticed that you have a song for my dad, too.
Yes. My dad was like, you know, what can you say? You know, your parents always know, you know, what you're supposed to do in life, right? So the first thing that I kind of made my dad mad about was when I switched from piano to play bass. He was like, what? We've just been paying for lessons since you were 6 years old to the conservatory, and what are you talking about? You switching to bass. I said, Dad, I think I want to play bass. So, you know, when I was finally good enough to play with him, he switched the story. He's like, well, I created a bass player, right? But your dad always knows what you're supposed to do. I was playing college football, and he came down to L.A., and, you know, I wasn't going to make it to the pros, and he came down and got me when I was 17 and said that, you know, you need to be playing the bass, son. You're not going to make it to the pros. And 2 weeks after that, from when I was 17, I've been playing professionally, touring with people ever since then. I've really had a blessed life. So song for my dad, I actually got him on the way to his gig, said, hey, I need you to put a piano part on this record, and he did it. We actually did that in 1997, and it was supposed to be on a previously released CD, but it never came out. So he died 4 years ago on October 24th, 2008. So I thought it's fitting that it be on this album because there's just so much love on this album.
Wow, I was just thinking as you were telling us about about Romancing the Bass, how each song has a story.
Beg your pardon?
Each song has a story, and that's so nice. I mean, like from knowing who wrote it to having, you know, the story you told us about Tupac, and you know, when you were teaching, coaching, I think you said, at Mount Tamalpais High School.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's really
nice. It's personal. You know, I heard, you know, what's really funny is I heard a really famous songwriter that's really famous right now one time do an interview and say that it was just business to him. He just wrote songs, you know. But a lot of the people that I've talked to, like Lionel Richie and a lot of the songwriters I've been around, they say that it's personal, and with me it's personal. I know that Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis told me that when they first worked with Janet Jackson, they said that they spent time with her to get to know her. And then they were able to do that. I will tell you that everybody that played on the record, my regular guys, we've done over 300 songs over the last 2 or 3 years, and producing people, and the affinity between us and the love between us comes out on every song.
Wow, that's amazing. 300 songs?
Yeah, I have a core group of people. Sylvester Burks plays keyboards. Dante Tess, and he's not only does he play keyboards with me, he has his own solo project. He's a gospel legend. Dante Taz Roberson plays drums. He plays with the Whispers and Cameo and a bunch of other people, but he plays drums. Bill Hampton played with the Braxton Brothers and Lettucey, and he plays guitar, and then myself on bass. But we get into they know me, and I know them, and they know what I want on songs. And it doesn't matter what the style is, we still get that love, and we're able to project that feeling on every song that we do. And I write a lot with Larry Batiste, who's, you know, who's the musical director for the pre-telecast for the Grammys, and he just finished doing Charlie Wilson's record. You know, he does a lot of really high-end records. He's a well-known commodity here in the Bay Area, but he's a buddy that I write the music, and he usually writes the lyrics.
Sounds fabulous. Yeah, and Tupac just had a birthday about a week ago on the
6th. Yeah, about a week ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew him and his mom. I knew when they lived in Marin City, Phoenix. And I watched that whole thing, you know, go up and the rise of him. And, boy, I will tell you this, if people don't know this, this kid went to school. He was in drama. He wasn't really he hung out with the, excuse expression, but he hung out with the white kids that were in his drama department. And then at lunchtime, he would come down and do raps with his partners, but then he'd go right back to class because he was a good student. He graduated, I know, and he was a great student, you know. So when it came up, you know, and I asked him one time, I said, man, so you're kind of street. And he said, Tony, that's, you know, he actually called me Mr. Saunders. Said, Mr. Saunders, you know, that's just my image. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm just the same old pop. And, you know, I loved what he did. I appreciate a star like that. Just tragic that he left us too soon.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. I was noticing on your piece, Bigger Than Outside, that you have some rap on it, right?
The song Tender Lovin', I have
Tender
rap
Loving
on it, yeah.
Rap. Yeah, who's doing the rap on Tender Lovin'?
That's Tiana Pointer. He'll be there tonight. And he's the Pointer Sisters.
Oh,
his dad is the older brother of the Pointer Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really nice because I've got to be around them. I was actually around them when I was young, and to come back around them and have their nephew in the group, it's really, really fabulous. And they support us to the max. It's really nice.
Yeah, yeah. I used to teach at Contra Costa College, and Fritz Pointer, their brother.
Yeah, that's whose son it is.
Oh.
Yeah, that's Fritz's son, yeah.
Oh. Small world, that's funny. And then,
yeah, it is.
And then Lizzie Way, his mother, she was over, I think, student missions or something like that when my younger daughter was at the California College of Arts and Crafts.
Mm-hmm.
He retired from there. Oh, that's Fritz and Lizzie Way's son. Oh, that's funny. I remember when he was younger.
Yeah, when he was a baby. They and Fritz and Liz come to every gig, and they really support us. They're really proud of us, and like the older sisters have heard the CD. Mm-hmm. Bonnie hung out with us, and she really likes the group, and you know, so it's really like a family.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how much that Fitz is about family.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just They come to the rehearsals. They make sure, and we, you know, we don't. When he does rapping, everything is like, you know, first class. It's not. It's not, you know, something that's not first class. And you know, it's really appreciated, and you know, just to, well, you know how great that family is. Mm-hmm. So we just try to, you know, keep that spirit going.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, really great, you know, Oakland family, you know, because Fritz and his sisters grew up in Oakland. So,
right.
You know, they're part of the Oakland legacy. And
that's right.
If I'm not mistaken, I don't know if Fritz went to McClyman's, did he?
I'm not sure where he went.
Okay.
I do know that he retired from Contra Costa College.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, yeah. Or this is his last year or something. But I know that they do a lot of trips now, him and Liz. They're all over the place. And it's really nice to watch the Pointer Sisters because, you know, they have their granddaughter sings with them.
Nice.
You know,
oh,
and
awesome.
It's tearing it up. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great when, you know, one is able to pass on the legacy and you see the multiple generations, you know, so it's
correct.
Like, it's continuing, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah. So which CD is this for you?
This is CD number 3. My previous CD was a gospel CD called He Lifted Me Up, which came out in 2005. And then I think, in 90-something, I did a CD called Whispering Waters. This by far is the one that's launched me into, you know, national recognition. And, you know, it's being heard all over the world, and you know, it's really nice. It's a really a great mixture of music, and you know, I'm really proud of it. You know, like when you get to a point in your life when you know you're not being cocky about it, but you feel it and you know that it's good, and that's the you know that it's good, so you wear that proudness without having to tell people. And you know, I'm really proud of this project.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So your concert this evening. A Romance in the Bass, 7 o'clock. I guess the doors open for the meet and greet at 7. The doors open at 6. I was wondering, let's see, Lorraine Hansberry Theater located at 450 Post Street. What time does the performance begin? I'm not quite...
8 o'clock. 8 o'clock, the performance, yeah.
Is there just one performance, or are you having a two?
Yeah, we'll play. We have a show that we've done. We've gotten to play with Jeffrey Osborne and David Benoit a couple of times. So we have we could tailor the show to however. But like this will be a show like when we play Yoshi. It'll be a straight 2 hours, hour 45 minutes. It'll be good. You will definitely get your money's worth.
Right.
You won't leave. You won't leave unfull of music.
Right. Yeah, and for information, people can visit LHTSF.org, which stands for Lorraine Hansberry Theater, San Francisco.org.
Correct, and there are some tickets available at the door. I know we had a snafu this morning because the tickets went offline, but there are tickets at the door available.
Great. And why don't you give people your website? It's a very nice website, and people can listen to your music there and see what you're
going
to do next.
Okay, my website is www.tonysaunders.com. You can hit me on Twitter at Saunders, and on Facebook you can hit me at Tony Saunders, bassist producer, and you can find out what I'm producing and what I do pretty much every day. I try to keep up with it and answer everybody's questions personally. I don't have a staff that answers the messages. I actually answer them myself. So when people want to talk to me, I talk to them. I was very blessed this year to have 3 songs that I produced on the charts at the same time. So I'm really loving doing music. And also, I help kids as much as I can, too. So that's my life.
Right, yeah. So we're going to close with your piece, Bigger Than Outside. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
That song was actually written by the Bay Area's, it was written by myself and the Bay Area's great flute player, Kimberly Jackson.
Oh,
and
actually, yeah, Kimberly.
Yeah, KJ. Yeah, KJ is great. And that was actually supposed to be on her record, but the label folded that she was dealing with. And then a year later, you know, I told her I was going to put it out with me playing the melody. And And so that's what happened. But she is just a great person, and I loved working with her. She's just a phenomenal, she's a phenomenal flute player, and, you know, I always wish her the best. But it came out on my record, and it's like been, it was my, the best week it had for me was the week that it came out in Billboard with the most ads, and we were right underneath Esperanza Spalding. And I was, you know, that touched my heart that, you know, we had that many people that liked the record one week of my life, you know, and to be mentioned in the same breath as Esperanza Spalding touched my soul.
That's wonderful, wonderful. Well, it's been really wonderful, great having you on to talk about this concert at Lorraine Hansberry Theater this evening, which is going to be really wonderful, and looking forward to having some other conversations with you, because I don't think there's anybody that you don't know.
Well, there is, but it's really a blessing when you can just, you know, just be a real person, and you know, it's the way I was treated, though. You know what I mean? I had an experience this year where I'm getting to work with the original keyboard player in Earth, Wind, and Fire, Larry Dunn.
Wow.
And you know, he called me. We talked on the phone for hours. You know what I mean? And he's like, you know, he'll text me and say, "Hey, brother, I just want to tell you blessings today. Have a great day." You know what I mean? And to meet people in the industry that are just really super nice and really everybody has treated me. Whether it was Eric Clapton or whether it was Joe Sample, Esther Phillips, Chaka Khan, or whoever, it has been like they always treated me really nice. So I try to return that, you know, you are like what you learn. So I try to be nice to everybody that I can and do as much as I can for people, because the more you give, you know, then you get blessed. So
right.
I just try to keep giving.
Right. Yeah, last night I got a chance to hear Cecil McBee. He's a part of the Cookers, and
oh, nice!
Right now, they just came out with a new CD called.
Right, what a great bass player!
Yeah, he is. He's awesome, and I wonder if you could talk about your instrument, because we haven't talked about the bass and what attracted you to it, and do you play the upright bass as well as the electric bass?
I have an electric upright, but I do play. I can tell you this: I play the electric bass with the feeling of an upright player, you know what I mean? I do have that in me. You know, I love to play jazz as well as commercial music. So I grew up listening to Ron Carter and to Paul Chambers.
Yeah.
And, you know, my godfather was Wynton Kelly, so I listened to a lot of his music. And my cousin, Eddie Moore, who passed a few years ago.
Really? That was your cousin?
Yeah, that's my cousin, yeah. That's my first cousin. So I grew up around, I was around him. So my dad was around like Jimmy Smith and McGriff and all those guys. And, you know, I was around my cousin Eddie Moore. And so I got to meet, you know, Stanley Turrentine, Sonny Rollins, and Dewey Redman. You know, I got to see, I got to see great music. So my spirit comes from watching all of that music when I grew up. You know, from seeing Dewey Redman play some incredible stuff, you know, and those musicians, and to seeing Stanley Turrentine to just be one of the, God, he could play great jazz music, and to get to see that stuff firsthand was incredible. I mean, I met Cannonball, you know, it was just incredible. My cousin also is Ray Chu, who is the MD for American Idol, and so I would go to his house in the summers. And, you know, I'd be around Nat Adderley Jr., Francisco Centeno, that great bass player. You know, I'd be around Ralph McDonald, Ralph McDonald, Richard T., Steve Gadd, Anthony Jackson. So I got a good gist of what great music, you know, what great music is all about. And, you know, I just try to do it as blessed as I can.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. So the instrument itself, though, you know, it's a stringed instrument, but it's also a percussive instrument. So what about it? I mean, and then you were playing piano, and piano
mm-hmm.
is string and percussive too, but in a different
right.
way. So what is it about the instrument that you love so much, and what is it about the physicality of the bass that just...
That it makes the song what it is. Because if a bass player is playing a slow ballad, but he's playing country bass line to it, it's a country song. You know, if a bass player is playing like Stanley Clark, you know, where you hear percussive and you hear great lines, that's more what I would say I love about the instrument, that I'm able to solo on it or play one note and just be a foundation. You know, I listen a lot to Stanley Clark and Marcus Miller, just because I'm like them. I do production and I play the bass, and I like the way that the bass molds a song and the way that you hold the group together. Because if the bass player is playing swing, you know, it's a swing song. You know, I used to be around Vernon Alley a lot, and he would always tell me, you gotta swing. He taught me how to count swing music. So
Vernon Alley's really great. I've interviewed him. He's nice.
Yeah, he's just a phenomenal player. So, you know, the percussiveness of that, yes, that's all incorporated into my plan, definitely. You know, you see the percussiveness of it, and you hear the melodicness of it, and you, as well as you hear, I could play one note and make it sound like the best thing you ever heard.
You're one of those anchors in what they call the rhythm section, huh?
Oh, yeah. And plus, I grew up around, like, great cats like Eddie Marshall, you know,
great drummer,
you know, just really, the odds of not succeeding were kind of eliminated if I paid attention. You know what I mean? You hate to, but everything that my dad taught me, I do now. You know what I mean? It's really funny to me because he taught me. I was his assistant when he did this TV show, The Twilight Zone. Uh-huh. And, you know, I do TV shows right now. I was always with him in the studio. You know, I would go there every day and watch how he did production and watch the engineers. And I would say, back when they had tape, I would go, can I rewind the tape? You know, I was always interested in doing that. And, you know, so it came to pass.
What did your father do on the Twilight Zone?
He was when they did the show again on CBS. When they brought back the Twilight Zone, he was the guy who did the music every week.
Okay.
He did that with the guys in the Grateful Dead. The guy that plays bass in the Grateful Dead gave the job to me because he didn't have time to do it every week.
Oh.
So it was great because I got to play with those guys in the Grateful Dead every week. And work with my dad, and we had everything first class, you know. So it was really nice.
Wow, you had some really wonderful experiences, but there was no pressure, right? You could have done anything you wanted with your life, right?
I thank God that my dad took me to the studio every day because, you know what? I have never even filled out a job application. You know what I mean? Now I'm too old, so it's like wow. If something happened. It'd be like, whoa, what do I do? You know, maybe I could be a guard, a security guard or something. But, I don't even know how to, you know, I didn't have those skills. But so I'm just trying to keep concentrating on music.
Right, yeah. Well, we were talking about, the whole idea of inheritance with my guest that preceded you. She's the director, Marissa Wolf, of a really wonderful play called Good Goods by Christina Anderson that closes Saturday, tomorrow. And in the play, we have this father who left his store to his son, Stacy, and the last name of the family is Goods, and so the store is Good Goods for that
mm-hmm.
reason. And Stacy is, comes home, he's a stand-up comedian, and he has an act with another woman, and he's decided to come back when his father dies to take over the business. And so we were talking about, you know, inheritance and legacy, and your father and mother and family have left you and given you a wonderful inheritance and legacy and path. And you and obviously it must be what you're supposed to be doing because you are doing so well at it. So it's really great, you know, to be able to, within our families, be able to have these kind of legacies and have this kind of inheritance so our children aren't, you know, basically left empty-handed when it's time
correct.
To step up.
Yeah, correct. I think, you know, my mom listened to Nancy Wilson all the time, and I remember when I met Nancy Wilson, she was the nicest person in the world.
Yes.
I said, Nancy Wilson, I grew up listening to you, and I love the way you sing, and she had just watched me play bass. She said, look, honey, I like the way you play bass. Sure, I'm going to take a picture with you. You know what I mean? But my mom likes music, and my dad, of course, was into music, and, just that's all I knew. And it was no pressure, but it was gentle nudges. My parents and my grandma took me to piano lessons every week, religiously. She was good and made me stay in church so that I grew up playing music in church, too. So,
yeah.
You know, really a wonderful thing.
Yeah, you know, and musical training is really wonderful, even if you don't choose it as, something you want to do with your life. It's just, you know, just having that kind of discipline. It also does
mm-hmm.
something for the brain development. It's people who
mm-hmm.
play music are using parts of their brain that those who don't play music and have never had that kind of training don't use. And so it just opens you up to a whole lot of different possibilities. I'm sure you're aware of Oaktown Jazz Workshop and Khalil.
Oh, yeah.
Reed,
I grew up under him, too. You know, he was a great cat, man. I miss him. And what he did with the schools is, you know, I used to do some of those. I used to sub in his band when Ron Belcher couldn't make it.
Oh, yeah.
It was great, though. He was just a phenomenal cat. You know, I just came across the pictures when he came and played with my dad.
Oh.
You talk about a good soul. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how can I help but when you see all of these great souls around,
mm-hmm.
you know, it has to rub off a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you talk about it's not just rubbing because they actually touch you, like, physically.
Yeah. Oh, man, it was.
Yeah.
You don't realize all of this stuff that you grow up when it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, when I sit back and look at it, I just go, my God, I'm thankful and I'm glad that I'm prayed up. And just the blessings keep coming down because I just keep giving.
Right.
And, you know, and I'm always willing to learn. You know, I learn so much from these young kids today that I'm around, you know, because they have the advent of YouTube and when I was learning how to play bass lines, I had to put the needle back on the record player a little bit. But now they just back it up a little bit on YouTube. They can see how you do it. They can hear how you do it. You know, so they're coming out. You know, it is. Each generation is better. And I'm not a hater against that. You know, they're really coming out really, really phenomenal. And, you know, I'm here to give them their praises.
Well, thank you so much again for the wonderful conversation and have a wonderful time at this concert, the Summer at Lorraine Hansberry Theater featuring the romantic melodic sounds of Tony Saunders Romancing the Bass. And that's tonight at 7 o'clock. Doors open and the concert's going to start at 8, but you can mingle and meet Tony before the show and certainly afterwards, and you get tickets at the website lhtsf.org. And we're going to close with this piece, Bigger Than Outside. Thank you. Saunders, Bigger Than Outside, and don't miss the concert tonight at Lorraine Hansberry Theater, 450 Post Street. The reception starts at 7 and the show starts at 8. It's going to be really, really lovely. And I wanted to remind folks to that this is weekend 4 of the 34th annual San Francisco Ethnic Dance Festival. And two of our guests over the past month, Julia from Chinakeri Ensemble Zimbabwe, they're performing this weekend, and Shavna, who talked about the Middle Eastern dance traditions of belly dance, they are performing along with, six other ensembles. So it's going to be really great, and it's again at the Novellas Theater, where the performances were last week as well, a Novellas Theater, part of the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts complex, is located on Howard at 3rd Street, and there are shows on the 23rd, which is Saturday, and the 24th. 23rd has a matinee, and the 24th, matinee in the evening, and the 24th just has the matinee. So don't want to miss that, and don't forget, this is the 75th season for Stern Grove, and it's going to be a really wonderful opening concert. It's going to be really great. And one of Tony Saunders' mentors, let me see if I can find that name quickly, is actually going to be performing this particular season. And he is also a music producer, and I am not seeing his name right at the moment. Oh, darn. Oh, well, can't tell you who he is, and you're going to kill me when I jot it down. I'm going to find it and put it on the website because I'm not seeing it right now. But he's a really wonderful music producer and a great person as well. So thanks so much for tuning in again to another edition of Wanda's Picks. Peace and blessings.